The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The September issue of Our State Magazine features 12 articles all about North Carolina's rural roots. The cover photo shows a picture of the first barn quilt commissioned by the Arts Council of Ashe County, where this folk art abounds. This barn is called the Delectable Mountains and is located in Baldwin. The quilt square decorating this vintage red barn features a design in red, green, and mustard yellow. First up is the welcome message, School Spirit of 76, by the editor, Elizabeth Hudson, and school is in parentheses. On the first day of first grade, 1976, the year of the United States Bicentennial, I stepped cautiously into my new classroom, clutching a metal Holly Hobby lunchbox that held a banana sandwich wrapped in wax paper, a can of chocolate pudding, and a small pouch in which I'd stashed a newly minted bicentennial quarter, a gift from my great uncle who ran the Bank of Coleridge, to buy milk in the lunchroom. I found a spot among the rest of the wriggling and restless wide-eyed children, my new classmates, each of us buzzing with anticipation, nervous but excited to begin our 12-year journey together. The energy in that room could have empowered a small town. I took to school as if it were a second home, finding comfort in the gentle guidance of the teacher, absorbing each lesson like a sponge soaking up water. I lost myself in the stories we read aloud, in the pictures we drew, in the joyous freedom of the playground. That fall, our class put on a play about the American Revolution. Cast as Betsy Ross, I sat in a rocking chair on the stage with a crocheted shawl around my shoulders, a bonnet on my head, and a flag draped across my lap, miming the stitching together of a symbol of our nation's beginnings. I don't remember if I had any lines, but I do remember rocking in that chair with such intensity that my mom and grandmother, who were watching me from the front row, held their breath, fearing I might topple off the side of the stage. I'm happy to report that I stayed upright. It's been 48 Septembers since that first day of school, and each year, as summer tilts and topples into fall, I feel a sense of familiar excitement for the air that turns a little brisker, carrying with it the crisp promise of a new season. In quieter moments, I remember the classrooms of my childhood, the rows of wooden desks worn smooth by generations of elbows and arms. I can still hear the echo of youthful voices. I can still feel the weight of a lunchbox in my hand, its metal sides cool against my skin, the latch clicking shut with a reassuring snap. A few years ago, at the start of a new school year, I was invited to speak about my career as a magazine editor to a group of second graders at South Newton Elementary near Hickory. The children, fidgety and bubbly and chirpy, welcomed me into their classroom with waggling waves, their tiny hands shooting up with questions. "Do you read all the stories in the magazine? How do you come up with new ideas? Have you met any famous people? What's your favorite dinosaur?" We read a book aloud, and I join the class for lunch in the cafeteria. No sign of the metal lunchboxes that I remembered so well, but trays still clattered, children's sneakers still squeaked against the polished floor, and colorful posters lined the walls, pictures and projects from proud little artists. Sometimes I feel the weight of time. Days and moments that pass so quickly they blur together, leaving a seamless quilt of memory. I know there's no holding back the clock. That afternoon the bell rang, end of the school day. Mrs. Mosley, the principal, thanked me for coming, and I paused in the doorway, watching the students scatter, their backpacks bobbing, the energy of youth unencumbered. We pushed open the door, and off they flew into the open sky of their future. And now I will take you on a descriptive journey through this month's pictorial essay, entitled Into the Woods, featuring North Carolina's four national forests that conserve our untamed lands for wildlife and human explorers alike. From sweeping vistas to secluded coves, North Carolina's four natural forests conserve our untamed lands for wildlife and human explorers alike. They already read that. All right, this first picture is a pathway, and there's a sunlight coming through a grove of pine trees, tall, skinny pine trees with greenery on either side, and a hiker in the foreground. Chasing the sun as always, photographer Neil Jernigan pauses for a self-portrait in the soaring pine woods that lie along Patsy Pond Trail in Croatan National Forest. And let's talk a little more about Croatan National Forest. Water, water everywhere. The sprawling Croatan National Forest is a coastal woodland whose feet are rarely dry. Drained by tidal rivers and bordered by Bogue Sound, Croatan is a mosaic of bogs and marsh, dewy pine woods and tangled pocosins, the nearly impenetrable swamps on a hill that hold deer and bear and canebrake rattlesnakes, alligators cruise on sequestered creeks, ospreys and bald eagles course along brackish waterways. Edged by the sun-drenched Crystal Coast region, Croatan's secrets are, like all national forests, open for discovery by those with a taste for the wild. And we have a picture of a Venus flytrap and a sundew plant. Meat, please. To make up for the nutrient-poor soils where it thrives, the Venus flytrap supplements its diet with tasty flies and spiders. Sticky nectar glistens on a sundew plant, beckoning prey like ants and mosquitoes. And the Venus flytrap, it has an elongated, the top of the frond has an elongated, flattened pocket, if you will, that opens up, and when something crawls inside of it, an ant or a fly crawls inside, it snaps shut, and it's the enzymatic juices will dissolve the creature that has dared to enter the zone of death. And then we've got the sundew plant on the opposite page, and it looks like a bulbous looks like a Q-tip, actually, with a bulbous end on one end. And off of the Q-tip, for lack of a better term, is the little fronds. They're red. So the Q-tip that I'm using as an example is actually sort of a pale, pale yellow-green. And then you have these red fronds coming off of it. And on the end of each little frondlet is a drop of sticky nectar that it uses to attract and then secure guests such as mosquitoes and flies and ants and such. Croatan's coastal woodlands are frequently burned to mimic the natural cycle of forest fires, a practice that pays off in biodiversity. And it shows a smoky a picture with very lavender and purples in here, with the haze of the smoke where we've had a controlled burn. Next up is Nantahala National Forest. A deep, shadowed 8-mile-long cleft carved by an ancient river gives Nantahala National Forest its name. The Cherokee called the river Nundoyil, loosely translated as land of the noonday sun, for only when the sun is at its peak can daylight find its way into the gorge. Today, Nantahala National Forest is a 500,000-acre rumpled quilt tossed across the southwestern corner of North Carolina. Managed for wood products, wildlife, and wild spaces, it's a place that provides for the needs of both body and spirit. More than a mile high in elevation, the 3-story stone Waya Bald Outlook Tower was built by the Civilian Conservation Corps in 1937. And we have a picture of that lookout tower. with a stone wall along the path leading up to it, and a stone walkway as well. And it's at the end of a pathway, and it overlooks a part of the mountains. And in this particular picture, the mountains are in a variegated, almost burgundy to purple. So I'm not sure what time of day it is, late in the day or early in the day. It could be either one. And there's pillows of fog nestled among each craggy peak. Visitors to Nantahala National Forest choose their preferred adrenaline level. Wide-eyed rafters drop through the rollicking Class 3 Nantahala Falls on the eponymous river. The Bartram Trail follows the famed exploratory journey of William Bartram, who crossed the wilderness in the late 18th century. And you have a picture on one page of a group of five rafters going along a lower part of the falls. And the roiling water is a green color, like almost like an emerald green. Probably means it's very healthy. And then the opposite page, we have moss-covered rocks. There's a hiker walking along a path along some moss-covered rocks, and then just lots of greenery looking out into the forest. Very shady. Next up is Pisgah National Forest. Pisgah National Forest is a drama queen, famed for windswept ridges, cathedral forests, thunderous waterfalls, and high-elevation creeks that hold ancient brook trout. Pisgah is a beloved forested commons that has served as a place of renewal for more than a century. In 1914, Edith Vanderbilt, the widow of George W. Vanderbilt, sold 86,700 acres of the Biltmore Estate to the U.S. government. With that, the seeds for the first national forest in the East were planted. Backpackers on the Art Loeb Trail take a load off tired feet, soaking in the jaw-dropping 360-degree view from Black Balsam Knob. And we have a picture from inside a tent from a hiker, so we can see his feet. And beyond that, we see the view that he sees as he probably will wake up in the morning and see that beautiful mountain and the green grass in the foreground beyond his feet. And the other picture on the facing page is shows another view of that hiker, and with his feet poking out of his tent, where he can see the just incredible vista there from his campsite. Cascading 60 feet from its rocky brink, Looking Glass Falls gets its name from nearby Looking Glass Rock. When sheathed in winter ice, the rock's sheer face becomes a mirror. So we have a picture on one page of Looking Glass Falls, and it's the water is streaming down over this a rather flat surfaced rock, so that when it comes down, it's just a I can see why they call it Looking Glass. It's just very homogeneous in a view. It's not split. It's just one cascade of water coming down over into a pond, and lots of greenery going up the sides, trees growing, and a canopy over the falls. On the facing page is a picture of Looking Glass Rock, which we don't see it because it's not sheathed in winter ice, so we don't see the mirror that they're speaking of. But it is rocky on around the sides, and then it's got a little top knot of green trees growing at the very top. But it's like it's projecting out of the mountain, and the foreground is trees and oleander, I can't think of what I'm thinking of now, but anyway. Braided and beautiful, the milky cascades of Catawba Falls tumble nearly 100 feet. New viewing platforms were recently opened for a salamander's eye view of the spectacle. And we're looking at it from the this picture showing just streams coming down different places. places where the falls are split and coming down in different directions and across different surfaces and so forth. It's quite pretty. And we're looking at it from the bottom looking up, which is kind of nice. Maybe that is the salamander's eye view of this spectacle. A brook trout looks as though all of North Carolina's mountain lands were stirred into a great giant cauldron, then poured and pooled onto an artist's canvas. Red spots from a sunrise over the Appalachians, blue halos from the smoky sky at sunset, dark green vermiculations mirroring rhododendron and laurel, white-edged fins like lightning from a summer storm. To catch one of these brook is to hook a piece of the primal... brook trout is to hook a piece of the primal past. To release it back into the stream is to give thanks that such wildness remains. And we have a picture of a small trout that is about to be released into the river there. And it's, as described earlier, it has red dots on it and it has green. It's very... the dark green vermiculations and so forth. Rhododendron was trying to think of a few minutes ago. Rhododendron, not oleander. Pardon me. Then we have in the facing page, stealth, skill, and stunning beauty come together for a fly fishing angler on the Mills River, one of the sparkling gems of Pisgah National Forest. And he's in... mid-calf, I guess, probably in what is very cold water, and he has got his fly fishing gear, and he's leaning forward, trying to hook a trout, it looks like. And there's rushing water all around, but he's in a fairly shallow place in that river. Next is, or the last one is, Uwari National Forest. Once upon a long time ago, the Uwari Mountains drew a craggy, 20,000-foot-tall curtain across the midsection of North Carolina. Now, worn down to rounded, oak-clad nubs, the Uwaris rarely crest 1,000 feet in elevation. A few hundred million years will do that to you, but the passage of time has also created a landscape where the bones of the ancients, mountains, creeks, and haunts of moonshiners and gold miners, beckon hikers and hunters and get away from it allers from across the Piedmont. The trail shelter at Eagle's Nest atop the ridgeline at Little Long Mountain offers a wide open vista of the rolling Uwari landscape. And it definitely is, it's in this area is sort of where the foothills have been worn down. And you see a couple of campsites and a trail shelter there, and these are just, you can tell where the mountains are very, very rolling. Built in 1911 for $40, the Pisgah-covered bridge over the West Fork branch of the Little River was swept from its foundations and washed downstream in a disastrous 2003 flood. Volunteers from the local community and the nearby North Carolina Zoo scoured the creek banks to collect pieces of the historic bridge, then reassembled the structure with some 90% of its original materials. Now, one of only two remaining turn-of-the-century covered bridges in North Carolina, the Pisgah covered bridge is a testament to the love that Uwari Mountain residents feel for their history and their home. In the Uwaris, cyclists pedal across a low water bridge over the Uwari River. Anglers on Baden Lake cast for a shore lunch. Off-roaders sling mud on the Wolf Den four-wheel drive trail, and horseback riders head out from Canebrake Horse Camp. And we have a picture of that $40 covered bridge that has been restored and replenished. And it's, of course, a single lane, and it's probably 100 feet maybe in length. And it's the rising up or above the river where it is just a massive effort to have these stones that are stacked upon stacked. And it may be in more modern day, perhaps it's been reinforced in some other fashion, but These stones are stacked up underneath the bridge, and it's very picturesque. And a stone, short stone wall coming off the bridge, I guess, to guide travelers. In a rare visit from outer space, the northern lights illuminate the Eagle's Nest shelter on the ridgeline of the Uaris. So several weeks ago, we were able to see, or different people were able to see, the Aurora Borealis, even down as far south as North Carolina. And someone has captured a picture, and it's just stunning. The night sky with little pinpricks of light from stars goes from a dark purple to a magenta to a lighter pink, and then down into a pale green at the base of that picture. Switching gears, let's have our first article from the theme of this issue, which is all about the rural issue. And this article is entitled Square Roots. Patterned after traditional heirloom blankets, yet displayed like bright rural billboards, quilt blocks bring color, symbolism, and visitors to our mountains. See these pieces of American folk art as we wind past the barns and buildings of the Carolina countryscape. So if you'll, at the beginning I mentioned about the one that's on the front page is a red, green, and mustard yellow quilt square on a rustic vintage red barn. The red is a very deep red. If the Lone Star block on this barn in Fleetwood reminds you of Nana's needlework, there's a good reason. Star of Bethlehem, with its sky-like dark background and vibrant focal point, is a popular patchwork pattern that has inspired many quilt blocks. And so on this barn, there's the Star of Bethlehem. It's a dark navy blue background. And there's eight pointed star. And in that star, in the very center is yellow. And coming out of the center of the star is a green, and then a darker green. And then out from that, a pale lavender and slightly darker lavender. This is going out like a starburst. And then it goes into brilliant hot pink, and then orange, and then the points of each of the star, each of the eight points is tipped with yellow. And in each quadrant of this quilt block is another smaller eight-pointed star, and it's in yellow. And it's positioned on a weather-worn barn that's just natural wood color, natural weathered wood. Ash County. Without even a word, quilt blocks tell stories. Combining heritage and design, they honor lost loved ones, signal a farm's focus, or proudly display a family's heirloom quilt pattern. Sometimes they simply add a punch of color to a rustic landscape. Western North Carolina has one of the nation's largest concentrations of quilt blocks, many of which have been stitched into trails by local groups. Such is the case in Ashe County, where the Arts Council has identified more than 150 blocks that can be spotted along a variety of scenic drives. The Squares and Stars quilt block gives a complimentary crown to the Witherspoon Barn, located in the Blue Ridge Mountain town of Jefferson. This, of course, is an old barn that looks like some of it is made of cinder block that's been painted red. There's ancient weathered wood that is maybe was once red and is now has faded away. And the roof of this barn is red as well. And it's got some wear on it too. So this Stars and Squares quilt block has a center of navy blue and then 4 points of yellow. And then those expand into eight points of purple and pink. And then underneath it all is like another square tilted that's yellow. And some green on the outer quadrants, the points or the corners of each of the square is is a green color. And the backdrop is, of course, fall colors, which is absolutely beautiful. You see all of the oranges and reds and greens and browns and golds of the foliage. Just past a bend in the road, the B.J. Bear Barn in East Jefferson displays the block Memory. In Baldwin, the one that we mentioned that's on the face of the cover of the this magazine, was the first quilt block commissioned by the Ashe County Arts Council. So we have two barns actually are close to each other. And there's another picture of that red barn with that beautiful one that I mentioned before, the red, green, and mustard yellow color. Again, we've seen fall foliage that's beautiful. And then Mitchell County. Inspired by the abundance and beauty of the region's quilt blocks, spruce pine artist Emma Cadman launched a collaborative project of her own. In a series called Mosaic Mondays, Cadman welcomed community members to Spruce Pine's downtown pocket park to piece together a barn quilt style mosaic from donated dinner plates. The completed piece, Downtown Spruce Pine Community Quilt, now hangs on a weathered wall in the park. It gives a little pretty back to the county, says Cadman, who's called the plate lady for her work on dozens of such public art pieces. People can see a little bit of themselves and Mitchell County in the project. And it is a quilt square made of pieces of pottery and plates, dinner plates and such. Moving to Haywood County, Shelton House is a center for Western North Carolina heritage and craft, and was the first site listed on Haywood County's quilt trails. Its milkmaid block pattern featuring stars and arrows honors the family's dairy farm. Then we also have other ones here. We've got the Waynesville Maple Tree Veterinarian Hospital, which has a more modern-looking quilt square with a puppy dog and a kitty cat on there. The Pigeon Community Multicultural Development Center, which has four vignettes in a square there. The Animal Hospital of Waynesville, which also has a cat. It looks like it's a more modern-day quilt. It's a cat opposite each other, two cats. And the Folk Moot exhibit quilt blocks as symbol of their mission. So these people are using them as symbols of their mission, if you will. Yancey County. More than 150 quilt blocks dot Yancey County's Blue Ridge Mountain byways. A cluster of about three dozen blocks has been mapped in Burnsville alone, including the McIntosh Star, the High Pastures Retreat Center, Shepherd's Light, and that's just the start. Many other quilts, while not formally identified, nevertheless delight. With these country canvases proudly peeking out from around the bends in roads, our mountains towns stay blanketed in color and comfort. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions, call us at 919-832-5100.